two documentaries mount their snowmobile and ride toward the unknown, leaving the city behind. Churchill River, encouraged by the image of the frail old man at his window, they set up their equipment one last time. And wait, under the glimmering lights of the auroras. For the first time since they arrived in Churchill, they think back of the man who built the recording device, resting on the ice between them. Long ago, that man spent hours upon hours attempting to hear the northern lights, only to end up listening to the sound of silence. But the man didn't despair. Instead, he began to give less and less importance to the actual sound of the auroras. He began to cherish these long moments spent isolated from the world, waiting, listening, his eyes turned toward the sky. In these moments, he found magic. And right there, at the place where the horizon starts to bend, the two documentarists found magic too.
Là, on les voit bien bouger, là. Regarde.
Wow.
Ils bougent vraiment vite, là.
Ouais. Oh, oui.
Oh, my God. Regarde-là. OK, mais il est juste pour nous, lui, là.
OK, c'est fou, là.
C'est long, là. Il est juste pour nous.
Just listen to That Forgotten Need to Probe the Sky, a sound documentary produced and directed by Héloïse de Mer-Spinard and Nicolas Lachapelle, in dialogue with the composer Welcome John, inspired by the visionary works of Tom Demers and Peter Medler, with the voices of Jeremy Allen, George Alexander St. Clair, Harry Tutuk, James Wells, Roland Sawatzki and Chris Campbell. Narration by Jacqueline Van de Geer. Field research by Alan James Rio Dubé. Archival research by Emma Brunet. Sound designed and mixed by Antonin Wies. Linguistic revision by Maureen Roberge. Graphic design by Max Reo and Criterion Design Bureau. The archives are from the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation and the Library and Archives Canada. Thanks to the financial support of Canada Council for the Arts, Le Conseil des Arts et Lettres du Québec, the Polar Bear Holding Facility, the Royal Legion and the Itzanitak Museum. We'll be right back.
That's your Canada Land. I hope you liked it. You can email me about it. I'm at jesse@canadaland.com. I'm also posting at Blue Sky if you care to follow me there. Today's episode was written and reported by Nicholas LaChapelle and Eloise Demers-Pinard. Our senior producer is Bruce Thorson. Audio assistance from Caleb Thompson. Max Collins is Canada Land's director of audio. I am the editor and publisher of Canada Land. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it. I'm Jesse Brown, and today we're talking about the news. We will update you on the Prime Minister's latest tactical achievements. Mostly, we'll be talking about some dodgy reporting on the gig economy. And finally, we'll dare to look at a topic that we have been neglecting for too long on this show.
Your Canada Land podcast doesn't talk enough about cellos.
Wait for that. All right, Jan Wong will join me in a minute, but first things first, got to give you some updates on the ongoing situation in Ottawa. Our Prime Minister is scrambling to hold on. He's doing damage control after Freeland's exit. To set the table here, even before all this went down, the Trudeau cabinet was a bit of a skeleton crew. There were ministers performing double duty. Then, you know, his housing minister, Sean Fraser, announced that his time was coming up. He would be leaving. That's just the housing ministry, not an important one these days. So that was already the state of play when Trudeau was trying to shuffle Freeland out as finance minister, and I guess he thought that Carney was in, but new details about how this all went down on that Zoom call. Trudeau seemed to have been confident that Carney was going to take the job, but of course, after Freeland did not do as she was told and deliver the fall economic statement and instead quit, Carney didn't want it anymore. CBC reported that Industry Minister François-Philippe Champagne was asked to take the finance job. He took himself out of the running before, finally, Dominique Leblanc was the one who was installed as emergency finance minister, also holding portfolios as the Minister of Public Safety and the Minister of Intergovernmental Affairs. Also, of course, previously Justin Trudeau's babysitter. I'm told he picks out Trudeau's novelty socks. He's helping the Prime Minister with his Hinge profile. This guy's up for anything. He's a trooper. It's just too much for one man. And so the news has emerged, leaks again, that according to the CBC, a consequential cabinet shuffle. And that's expected later today. This episode's coming out on Friday, December 20th. At least 10 ministers will be moved around to new portfolios. The Hill Times is looking into their crystal ball and pre-reporting that it will be MPs Miller, Anand, and McKinnon who will each get new portfolios. All of this indicating that, the PM is trying to hang on. He is frantically rearranging the deck chairs. Monday's rumors of an imminent resignation announcement, that fizzled away. Instead, we have a slew of headlines about how Trudeau is taking the time to reflect. He's calling up old friends, asking for advice, thinking it over. One thing he ain't doing, however, is talking to the press. Now, you will remember that in years past, some critics, like me, called the Prime Minister's year-end fireside chat sit-downs the one-on-ones that were held with the big players in legacy media as bullshit. That these were snowball interviews that were really intended to provide the appearance of accountability to the press. And this is not a specific Trudeau complaint. I think Stephen Harper was the Prime Minister who really pioneered the practice of providing like next to no availability to the press, but then sitting down at a time when nobody could care less for an interview that was designed to provide the least challenging questions possible. very cynical criticism from me that I think is being completely confirmed. Because right now, when the country actually does have challenging questions for our prime minister, every single year-end sit-down interview has been canceled. Former columnist, current cellist, and reigning Canada Land champion, Jan Wong. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks. I'm only on book two of Suzuki. I'm a beginner cellist.
Ah, the Suzuki method.
Well, the mail is starting to move again as postal workers head back to the job across Canada today after a month-long strike. But many are frustrated about that back-to-work order and the lack of a new contract.
Jan, after 4 weeks on strike, Canada Post was ordered back to work by the Canada Industrial Relations Board following a request by Federal Labour Minister Stephen McKinnon. I mean, as I speak, he's still the Federal Labour Minister. Who knows? Yeah, so Canada Post was back to work on Tuesday. As CBC reports, they were working under their existing contracts, which have been extended until May to allow the bargaining process to resume. Understandably, the union was not happy about this. In a statement, they said it is unlawful and that constitutional challenge to this process is scheduled for mid-January. Our fight for justice is far from over. Since the last two postal strikes ended this way, I guess it's not surprising that this happened. I am surprised that the government waited this long to intervene, given how the negotiations were going. So that is the news with our legacy courier service. It's got me in a labor news frame of mind, all of this stuff. And I think, you know, Canada Post was playing the holidays, you know, and I wonder if they played themselves, because they were like, see how much you like the holidays without Canada Post, people. And I think a lot of people were like, we do not notice your absence. Anyhow, labor reporting was in the air, and I noted, as a lot of journalists did, with plaudits and appreciation, this major story from the Toronto Star. It was getting a lot of praise. And it was about the plight of a different set of delivery people, Uber Eats couriers.
I'm Gada. I am a labor reporter at the Toronto Star, and I spent the last 6 weeks delivering Uber Eats. Our goal was to find out more about how the app works and the conditions under which a lot of the delivery workers, the conditions under which they work.
Here is some of the response. Journalist Emma McIntosh saying, meticulous, devastating, infuriating story. You've got to read this one. Saba Aitazaz at The Star, if you read one thing this weekend, read this incredible investigation by Gada Sharif into the shadowy aspects of a controversial gig economy. Jim Stanford, world-class investigative journalism by Gada Al-Sharif for Toronto Star. 6 weeks undercover as an Uber Eats worker. I also felt like this is really something like, I'm glad we have a Toronto Star that still cares about labor and will still invest. I mean, you did undercover work as a maid, Jan. Actually sending somebody in to represent the voices of workers who don't often get represented. So I read this and I think my jaw like hung open as I read that in 6 weeks working as a undercover Uber Eats courier, Gada averaged $1.74 per hour online. I guess that's like with the app.
Yeah, there's a lot of numbers there. And so I also thought, wow, 6 weeks. Because I worked as a maid for 4 weeks, but then I kept reading it and it got really confusing. First of all, I think it's great to do this story, but it's not really 6 weeks. If I was the editor, I would have said, you can't say 6 weeks, because it was 140 hours on the app.
Uh-huh.
So that works out too, if my math is correct, about 23 hours a week. So that's the first thing.
If you think of a 40-hour work week, that's more of like, you know,
half time.
Yeah. So is it? Did you work 6 weeks or did you work 3 weeks over a six-week period?
And I think her delivery time was very little. It was only 15 hours. Now, it became that the story becomes, oh, you can't get any orders.
No trips, no deliveries, no orders. I am not getting any orders.
I got zero deliveries.
I have had zero deliveries. I
haven't gotten any deliveries. I've been on since about 5:30, 5-ish.
They talk about online hours. She was online for a long time. Her online hour is the 174. I kept looking at the numbers. So it's like you having the website on, right? you're getting $1.74 an hour. The engaged hours is what Uber calls it. And I want to talk about engaged hours. She made $15.41 before tip. And her tip was about $1.30. So if you're really going to do the math, that's almost $17 for each engaged hour.
For the engaged, which is like when she's actually biking?
When she's making a delivery. And that's almost the minimum wage. It's not quite. So I just want to point that out. I found it really confusing. I had to take notes and then put them together.
You read this critically, like somebody who is a journalist and somebody who's done this kind of work before.
Yeah. So when I did the maid thing, first of all, it was full-time.
Uh-huh.
But we also had this problem of engaged hours. So that's why I was thinking about it. So the owner of the company paid us only for the hours we were mopping floors in a house, which was very annoying because we would have a 10-hour workday, but physically working 6 hours. Why? Because we're traveling between the houses, and the houses were not in the same neighborhood, so sometimes it would take a long time. So on my day off, I called the Ministry of Labor in Ontario, and I said, so is this legal? Like, I'm only getting paid for the hours that I'm mopping. I'm not getting paid for the hours that I'm actually driving or being in the car. I was the driver. We drove the team around, but nobody's getting paid. I'm not getting paid. And they said, no, if you're going between jobs, you're supposed to get paid. So in other words, our engaged time was the only time the employer paid us, but that's actually illegal. So it's interesting to me that Uber can have an app like this, and the online is typically, is that like work time?
Now, I know that if you commute to work, your time to work and home is not considered like time
Correct.
That your employer has to pay you for.
Ministry of Labor says you don't get paid for that.
Ministry of Labor says that's not work hours. That's getting to work and back.
Correct.
But while you're on the job, if there's travel to get to and from a work site, you're at work. You're not doing anything else.
You're at work.
Right.
If your boss tells you to go send this message, you know, to the office building down the block, you don't clock off.
Right.
You're at work.
Now, that was relevant in your experience when you were undercover as a maid. And I think the point is a valid one, that all that time should be compensated, and only paying a maid for the time when they're actually doing the maid work is basically wage theft.
Yeah, garbage.
Now, the question here is, when Gada writes about engaged hours and online hours, does it mean the same thing? Does it mean what she was paid for while she was on her bike doing Uber Eats, whether or not she had an order, whether
right.
or not, I mean, that, you know, that would be, I think, legitimate to say, look, I hit the ground in Toronto with my bike looking for orders, and I worked for 8 hours, and here's the average. Sometime I was driving somewhere so I could get an order because I was close to restaurants. Sometimes I was actually doing an order. Or what is this weird term, online hours?
Yes.
Because if you've got an app open, that is not the same thing as being necessarily on the job.
No, it's not the same as being a maid driving from house to house. So it is a very gray area. It's kind of like a really crafty work structure that Uber has created, so they don't have to pay you. She writes about circling around and around. She's trying to figure out how to get more jobs, which is very interesting. Is it better to keep moving around, or is it better to stay put in some so-called hot area?
I thought that, you know, I could hang out in one of these hotspots that is indicated on the app, and I could go and, you know, just hang out there and I'd get orders. And that very quickly became obvious that that was not going to be the case. I was very confused the first week about why I wasn't getting orders.
It's fascinating because I didn't know anything about Uber drivers.
I mean, this is fascinating for like a half a dozen reasons. There's so many things she's looking at that should be looked at about what is happening with the algorithm. And she looks at things like different people are given different pay for the same job when they're offering you an order.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
And how they incentivize you. And there are people who say that they give you better pay when you start to get you hooked, but then they start to decrease it. Or do they reward you for doing lots of orders? How? Because it's a total mystery. There's all kinds of interesting stuff. And like when you're talking about labor law with the gig economy, we don't have regulations like that get into the guts of what the algorithm is doing.
Yeah, labor law has not caught up to gig economy.
All of this stuff should be investigated, but the big takeaway that people have and what runs in like the headline and what everybody's tweeting about is $1.74 an hour?
But that's not really true.
We should be careful not to ascribe that to the reporter, because that sounds like the kind of thing that an editor would seize upon.
Yeah, let's blame editors. I agree.
Jan, what would you like to duly note today?
I'd like to talk about the airlines and their new fees, which are junk fees. Like, they're trying to, if you buy the lowest price fare now, I think it's going to start in January. If you want to bring on a bag, a carry-on, you now have to pay a fee. And before, you used to be able to choose your seat. If you waited 24 hours before your flight took off, you could not have to pay. Now you have to pay if you want to choose a seat at any time. But the real reason I want to talk about the airlines is Air Canada and cellos, because your Canada Land podcast doesn't talk enough about cellos. And I think you're missing a huge news story.
I get trolled for this online every day from the cello community.
Yeah, I'm trolling you for cellos, yeah. I'm gonna put out an alert to the cello community. So there was a concert supposedly last week at Kerner Hall, which is the best acoustics in Toronto.
Beautiful sound at Kerner Hall, yeah.
It's fantastic. And there's a cellist called Sheku Kanamason. He's a British cellist, young, 25 years old. And he was going to be playing a concert at Kerner with his sister, a pianist. And 1,000 people bought tickets, including me. And at the last minute, we got an email saying he wasn't allowed to bring his cello on board the flight. And so he can't come. And we're really sorry. And 200 people didn't get the email and showed up. So I was interested in Air Canada's policy, because Sheku bought a ticket. You have to buy a ticket for your cello.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't fit in the overhead.
And they still wouldn't let him bring it in.
No. And it doesn't weigh a lot. I play cello. I know exactly how tall it is.
It looks heavy. It's not. It doesn't weigh a lot?
Yeah, it's think of balsa wood. It's like a balsa wood plane. It's actually very light. It's the case that can be heavy, but it's no more than 10 kilos, right? But you're buying a seat.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're paying half price because you don't have airport fees and you don't eat. The cello doesn't eat. Doesn't go to the bathroom. So it's half price. Great. But he wasn't allowed. So I went on the Air Canada website and it says all this. It says you can. So I just like to send a shout out to Air Canada. Can you stop doing that? And is it because he's young and black?
Huh?
No, actually it isn't. Other cellists also have trouble, but I don't think it helps that he's young and black. Oh, he's a superstar. When he was 18, he played at Harry and Meghan's wedding. And then he went on to win Male Artist of the Year and Critics' Choice Award in the UK. So he's a superstar. Anyway, he's really great.
My read of the story, which is like very frustrating and idiotic, you would hope that just somebody with a brain would make a different call. I think that they had some excuse that like that 50% instrument fee is like if you pre-book a ticket for your instrument and then there was like some flight was canceled and he had to make alternate arrangements really quickly and the whole, you know, they weren't familiar with the cello.
It's true. His earlier flight on American was canceled because of weather. So the 9 hours in the airport, he books Air Canada, he buys a ticket, and the Air Canada website says you can do this.
Yeah.
You can even get pre-boarding. You can board between zone one and zone two so that, you know, your cello doesn't get stomped on by all those crazy passengers fighting for overhead. He doesn't take any overhead. It's taking a seat that he pays for.
Let the man and his cello on the plane.
Yeah, and it's a $4.5 million cello, so he's not going to check
it. Aye, aye, aye.
Yeah, cellos cost a lot. And when you're really good, someone loans it to you.
Duly noted. That is our show for today, and barring any unforeseen dramatic developments, that is a wrap on our media criticism for 2024, but it is not our last podcast. Great lineup of stuff you won't want to miss if you're looking for something to listen to while you're traveling or hanging out over the holidays. You can email me about today's show at jesse@canadaland.com. I'm on Blue Sky, might even be posting over the holidays if I can't help myself. Jan, I know that you are on a social media sabbatical, so instead, why not tell people about a great Jan Wong book that they can buy as a gift to a loved one over the holidays?
I have the perfect book. It's called Apron Strings, and it's travels with my son, and we do home cooking in France, Italy, and China. So it's a great present for your mom or a great present for your kid or anyone. It's lots of fun, and it's delicious, and I have recipes.
It's a great book for foodies who like excellent writing. This episode is produced by James Nicholson, mixing and mastering by Caleb Thompson. Our director of audio is Max Collins. Lucy Lamonier did the fact check for this episode. I'm Jesse Brown, the editor and publisher of Canada Land. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca.